Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Ramsay's Recaps, the Kitchen Nightmare Gordon Ramsay Recap Show. I'm your host, Courtney Seil. I am deep in a playwriting intensive right now, so this episode may or may not come out on time. I don't care. Either way, you're going to get it. And today I'm joined by my friend Rachel.
Hello, everyone.
Rachel's back. You haven't been here in a minute.
I've not been here in a minute, but I've been listening to all the episodes and I'm really excited to be back because they're just getting better and better.
Thank you. Unlike your kitchen.
I'm actually coming to you today fresh from my own kitchen nightmare.
It's relevant, we swear.
But yeah, I woke up this morning and the apartment above me pierced the hot water pipe. So my kitchen is currently flooded and it was raining out of our light. That was cool. That was a great time had by everyone in my building. The one apartment is not paying for four floors of damage. So if you thought you were having a bad day.
Oh, man. New York. It's so fun to live here.
Oh, great. I actually am really grateful that I feel very lucky. Like, yes, there are so many New York horror stories, but there also are buildings that take really good care of you. Like, our building's taking great care of us and not being like sucks to suck. They brought us a fan. They brought the water vacuum up to our apartment. Like, aww. They care. They're not just like, sucks to be you. So don't believe everything you hear.
Your new apartment is so nice anyways. Like, they got to do something to fix. You just moved in. Like.
Our kitchen was like beautifully newly painted and now all of the paint is like blistering off the walls and they have to repaint it all.
Oh man, they're going to have to like come through and scrape it off and then like sand it and then oh, it's going to be a nightmare.
I'm so sad.
Oh, well, Godspeed for your kitchen nightmare.
Yeah, so I feel for the Casa Roma people, or I feel for Gordon going into Casa Roma, rather. Oh, God.
Have you been watching any Gordon television shows?
I have. I'm deep into the new season of MasterChef, which they rebranded this season as MasterChef Legends. I think they had to do some like slightly different stuff for COVID. Like they are not doing any team challenges because I guess they don't want people working in like close proximity to each other. And they're only doing one challenge per episode. So, they did 15 people instead of 20, which I think was also like a capacity thing. They had to have just like fewer people on the set. Mm-hmm. So it's like a slightly different format, which has been interesting, but they're also doing Legends, which is really fun. So every episode, a new chef legend comes on. Like they've had Paula Deen, they've had Morimoto, and they come on and contestants have to do a challenge that is akin to whatever chef came on, which is really fun and definitely tests like different people's strengths. Everyone struggled with the Morimoto episode, which was hilarious because he came in and was like, I'm going to show you how to fillet this giant monkfish. And then you have to cook with monkfish, which half of you have never cooked with because like one of the contestants is like super poor and feeds her family on $40 a week. She's like, I didn't even know monkfish existed. So it's a whole thing, but I'm loving it. I'm loving it. I'm also really enjoying Gordon doing demos next to these master chefs and them like cooking circles around.
Oh, Gordon. I mean, Gordon does have Michelin stars.
Yeah. Well, and we were talking about this like a little bit, but I was like, listen, I don't think Gordon is a bad chef. I think Gordon is a really good chef. But he's very much branded himself right now as focused on less on cooking and more on reality television, which is totally chill. But it means that when chefs come in who are spending, you know, 24/7 cooking, they're going to show him up.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, he doesn't like cook in his own restaurants anymore. You know, it's very Guy Fieri, where I'm sure Guy Fieri is also a brilliant chef, but he's a reality TV star now too. Yeah. So you got to do what makes the money.
Like, I've cooked Gordon's recipes. You've cooked Gordon's recipes. They're good recipes.
They are.
He's not, like, a bad chef by any means.
No. No. And, you know, I praise at the altar of Gordon Ramsay, as everyone knows. So. So, otherwise, we wouldn't have this show. I've actually never watched MasterChef. I should watch MasterChef.
You need to watch MasterChef.
I've never really been into his competition shows. Like, I've never really watched Hell's Kitchen either, which I know that is still going for some reason.
Yeah. So I don't like Hell's Kitchen because the producers have come forward and been like, yeah, the purpose of Hell's Kitchen is to watch Gordon Ramsay yell at people. And yeah, that's like not my jam. Whereas I feel like on Kitchen Nightmares and on MasterChef, he's much more in his element as like a mentor.
Yeah.
And is really teaching and really cares about people. And when people do stupid shit, he'll yell at them because they're stupid.
I mean, yeah, because he still yells at people in Kitchen Nightmares for sure. And I have seen all of 24 Hours to Hell and Back, which is the new Kitchen Nightmares, basically. And it's the same format. And he does yell, but also he gets to like talk to these like chefs, and he loves talking to servers, and he loves talking to owners and like connecting with people. It's really much more fun for me to see him connect with people than to like yell at amateur chefs for not making a risotto right, you know?
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, on I can't speak for Kitchen Nightmares, but on MasterChef, most of the time, like any yelling is usually stemming from a place of like, they're doing a group challenge and they're like rapidly serving like 100 people and they're doing a chicken dish and like they're serving raw chicken. And so most of the yelling is coming from like, you need to take yourself seriously enough to not poison people.
I think it's similar in Kitchen Nightmares. It's like a lot of yelling because service is bad or the kitchen is a disaster and like, you're going to kill somebody.
Yeah.
As evidence in this kitchen, for sure.
As evidence in this kitchen. I don't know how they didn't have, I don't know how they got any customers.
Literally, like, okay, let's get into it. So this week, Gordon is in Lancaster, California, visiting Casa Roma. It is the oldest restaurant in the town and was originally opened in 1958. And so it was filmed during, like, the 50-year anniversary. So 2008-2009. It's owned by Nyla and her son, Jeremy. Nyla was a real estate agent, I think. She said she did real estate, and then she said she worked in a grocery store. I don't know what's true.
I don't know what she did.
Jeremy cleans carpets. Not these carpets.
Except not the restaurant's carpets. Which is a great moment when Gordon's like, really? Carpet cleaning? And then he looks down. Like.
So she bought the restaurant with the hopes of turning it around. It was already failing when she bought it. Neither of them had any restaurant experience at all. Only the bar seem to be making money and the restaurant is empty. She said that on a good night in her restaurant, she makes $175 and on a bad night, she makes $9.
Yikes.
Ew. It's not enough. And every night is like $100 on average, but the bar is like packed and people are just drinking beer. So I don't know how much money her bar is making. I've also been deep into bar rescue. So like, I'm like, but you're not making money on bottled beer. You have to get draft beer because that makes more money. So my brain is like, John Taffering this whole situation too, and I'm like, no, wrong show.
that's not what they're here for. You're gonna fix the food, Courtney.
I know. I still like would love to see a Bar Rescue Kitchen Nightmares crossover someday, like Gordon Ramsay, John Taffer team up and like fix something in Vegas together
where they're both, like that. Based. And then they both are just like, no.
Yeah.
They're like, just leave. They're like, I'm sorry, I don't have the patience.
Anyways, so they've owned the restaurant for 2.5 years. They've had almost 20 chefs in that time, which is a lot. They currently have Drew, who is the sous chef, who's been there for a year, and Eric, who's been there for 6 months, and he's the head chef.
Can we talk about how they've had 20 chefs in 2.5 years, and Eric, who is quite possibly the worst chef I've ever seen on Kitchen Nightmares, has made it 6 months?
Yes. He is so lazy. He does not know how to cook by the looks of anything he's doing.
He doesn't know how to cook. It's not even like he was a good cook who lost his mojo. He just has no idea what he's doing.
He's a fucking disaster in the kitchen. Poor Drew is like, hey, what do you need me to do? And Eric is like, I don't care. It's like, you have people in the restaurant who need their like chicken penne. Like, it doesn't take 30 minutes to make it.
It does not take 30 minutes to make chicken penne. You're not even making fresh pasta.
No, like, it's a box of Barilla.
Throw it in a pot of boiling water.
You got that at the Kroger down the street for 79 cents for a box of fucking Barilla penne pasta. Like, throw it in the water. 8 minutes later, it's al dente. Put some vodka sauce on it. Call it a day.
It's not hard. It's not hard.
So one of the waitresses, Ashley, she's the one who serves Gordon. She is convinced that, Eric is the reason Casarama has been doing well. She's right. She's like a shining beacon in this episode because she's like, this is all the problems with the restaurant and everyone knows it, but nobody does anything about it. So Eric believes his food is very good, but they don't send it out quick enough. It is described as bland. And Drew thinks that Eric is lazy and that he's expected to do everything at the kitchen. They do not get along. They don't communicate. We haven't seen communication issues like this since fucking Cafe 36 in season one with Barney and Pinto. Like,
yeah. And poor Drew is just shouting into the void. Like,
truly.
Should I start the saute? And then like crickets. Just crickets.
And then he's like, can I get a glass of ice water since you're not doing anything? And instead Eric yells at Nyla and is like, two glasses of ice water. And Drew's like, real nice, dude. Real classy.
And Eric's like, she's not doing anything. I'm like, you're not doing anything either.
You're supposed to be making a sandwich. She's supposed to be making like a Monte Cristo sandwich. So Gordon arrives and meets the owners. He enters through the bar and the bar has no windows. The bar is pretty busy, though. It's very dark in there. It's a little dingy. It's very much a dive bar. And then they say, oh, this is just the bar. Like, there's windows in the restaurant, but nobody eats the food here. So Gordon goes to the restaurant to eat lunch. And he is sat in this booth and is immediately like, this booth is broken. He finds, like, dehydrated limes and like straw paper in his seat, like he's like digging his hand through the cushions and the blinds are all like filthy and he's just like ew. This is also when Jeremy says that he was working in carpet cleaning and Gordon goes, is that blood on the carpet?
You're like, no, it's just dirt. And I'm like, no, that's either a spill of some kind or like some kind of fluid. That's not how
it looks like somebody died in that restaurant. Like, there was a bar fight that happened at some point, probably.
Also, the carpets are like coming up at the seams.
Yeah,
it's not just that they're dirty, they're like ratchet.
And the problem with carpets in restaurants in general is that they smell because they hold on to everything. I've never been into a restaurant with a carpet and been like, this is a classy joint.
Well, I mean, it's a 5-star restaurant. Like, spills happen and they're a bitch to clean out of carpet. So why do it? Just why do it?
It's like putting carpet in a bathroom. Who the fuck does that? Ew.
Nobody wants that.
Nobody wants that.
You want to be able to whip a Swiffer out and just call it a day.
Swiffer wet jet. Gordon sits and reads the menu. He notices that it says fine Italian dining instead of dining.
Two N's.
And he's like, is that the Italian spelling?
Asshole.
Gordon orders stuffed mushrooms, a Monte Cristo sandwich, and a medium Casaroma deluxe pizza. In the time it takes for all of this food to come out, Gordon switches his broken booth with a not broken one, does some laps around the restaurant because he's training for a 5K, I guess. And then he takes a full ass nap. And it takes like an hour for any of the food to come out.
I think it's an hour for the appetizers and then like 2 hours for the entree.
Yeah. And the whole time Nyla and Jeremy are like, is any food ready to come out? Like, just give me something. Are the appetizers ready? And the chef is like, Chef Eric is like, I'll put it all up at once. And he's like, give me a fucking appetizer, dude.
And then Eric is like, well, I don't know why you'd want to do that. Because people order appetizers to eat before their entree.
That's how appetizers work.
So, like, I don't want.
None of it makes sense. And poor Drew is trying his best. And we get shot. Eric goes out for like a smoke break in the middle of cooking Gordon's food. And
I think he says, like, if anyone needs me, I'll be outside. You're needed. Like, you're in the middle of a service.
It shouldn't take that long to make stuffed mushrooms. Those are things you can prepare ahead of time and just throw in an oven. You know? It doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make...
You made stuffed mushrooms when we had dinner at your house. How long did those take to make?
Literally no time. Exactly. Stuffing, which takes approximately 10 minutes, and then you put them in the oven for 20 minutes. Probably less, depending on like what your filling is.
And usually that's stuff you make before dinner service.
Yeah.
So you can have it ready, and then you just warm it up because it's a stuffed mushroom.
It's a stuffed mushroom. I also don't know how they're soggy. They're coming out of the oven.
Gordon gets these mushrooms and Ashley sets them down in front of him and he's taking a nap and she's like, here you go. Sorry. She's like so upset with everything that's happening. And he literally picks it up and squeezes it and it's just full of water. And he's like, this was definitely a frozen product, which means also it shouldn't have taken that long to cook.
Because you should have. I can't.
This whole episode is just incredibly frustrating if you can't tell.
It's so frustrating. And also you can't freeze, but like you can't freeze vegetables and expect them to do a thing. Like you can freeze vegetables and like grind them up and put them in a filling or something.
Yeah.
But you can't freeze mushrooms and then expect them to be good holders for a stuffed mushroom filling. They're not going to do it.
I don't think mushrooms should be frozen in general.
They shouldn't be.
They would like shrivel up weird, right? Like,
yeah.
They're meant to be eaten fresh.
They're meant to be eaten fresh.
Yeah. Oh, God. So then we get the Monte Cristo sandwich, which is really the ugliest fucking thing and, like, the most disgusting sandwich I've ever seen in my life. It is this bread. Like, what is a Monte Cristo? It's, like, ham and cheese.
It's ham and cheese. It is fried.
Deep fried, yeah.
Deep fried. So at least when he was, like, yes, it did need to go in oil. It didn't need to go in oil for the length of time or in the manner that Eric put it in oil.
Also, that oil looked fucking disgusting.
That oil was like black.
That fryer was bubbling and foaming and it had not been cleaned in years probably.
No. And then he took the basket out of the fryer and the sandwich wasn't in it. And
it like
your fryer it's getting broken.
And then it cuts to a shot of the sandwich on like the grill top, continuing to cook, I assume.
Why is it here?
And then it's finally served, and it's just this ugly deep fried beige thing covered in powdered sugar, with French fries.
Why does it have powdered sugar?
This isn't French toast.
Why does it have?
It's a savory sandwich, and Gordon physically like picks it up and like blows the powder. That's how much powdered sugar is on it. It's like a fucking beignet. Like,
and you can serve a Monte Cristo like with a semi-sweet jam or a marmalade. That's like a thing, and you like dip the sandwich in that. But that's like a fruit savory combo. It's not just straight powdered sugar on the bread.
Yeah, I think I'm thinking of a croque monsieur. I think I've had those.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like they're similar, right?
They're similar.
Yeah. Or a croque madame or whatever. I've had like some of those. And like those are like ham and cheese.
Yeah.
And they're not deep fried. But like this could be a really good sandwich. Like a deep fried ham and cheese sandwich sounds fucking good.
A good money is amazing. It's so bad for you, but it's amazing.
Gordon literally picks it up. He literally, again with like the mushrooms, but this time it's oil. And he just squeezes it. And it's just like a gallon of oil is squeezed out of this half of a sandwich. And he's like, he didn't even take a bite. He didn't even eat it. I don't blame him.
No. It's like when you go to a pizza place and you pick up the pizza slice and you just hold it for a minute while all of the excess oil falls off.
Any dollar slice in New York, yeah.
New York, which I don't go to. I don't like pizza.
You don't like pizza?
I don't like pizza. I've never liked pizza. Like even when I was a kid. I don't know why. I think I can't actually figure out a rationale for it. My current adult rationale is that if I want to eat tomato sauce, cheese, toppings, and dough, I want pasta.
Oh. What about like other types of pizzas? Like a white sauce?
It's fine. It's just not what I would order. I love stromboli. I will eat a stromboli any day.
Interesting.
I'm
very much a pizza purist. I love just like a pepperoni slice. Like I don't really like fancy pizzas all that much. Sometimes I like a spinach artichoke pizza, which is pretty good because it's got like goat cheese and like white sauce. But I literally ordered Domino's yesterday, so I currently have half a pizza in my fridge.
My Domino's order is mild wings and cheesy sticks. Like, I just don't order their pizza, but I love their mild wings and cheesy sticks.
Huh. I've never met anyone who doesn't like pizza.
I know.
I learned something today about you.
I was a weird child. I didn't like ice cream until I was 7, and everyone thought I was broken. I like it now.
I mean, ice cream is good. Anyways, Gordon gets his pizza next, 75 minutes later. The pizza is firstly raw, and I make a lot of my own pizzas. Like, I usually don't order pizza anymore. I usually make my own pizza because I like the dough that I make way better than any dough.
It tastes so much better when you make
it. Yeah. And it, no joke, after the dough is done, takes 12 minutes to make a pizza. Yeah. How did it take you 75 minutes to make a fucking pizza? How is it raw? It wasn't even that thick of a crust, but he's like, it's like wallpaper paste. I can't even eat it. He's like scraping peppers off this pizza, and it's like gooey and gross. Like, it's not hard to make.
It's not that hard. It's not that hard, especially it's this thin.
I don't want to like generalize Italian food in general, because there are some very difficult Italian food dishes to make, but Americanized Italian food is not hard to make. It is not hard to make quick. It is why there are so many fucking Italian restaurants in this country, because it takes 10 minutes to make a spaghetti and meatballs.
Yeah. And it's good if you do it right. Really good.
It when in doubt, and you're out and about, and you're like, I don't know what the fuck to eat, Italian restaurant. Because you know there's something on the menu you'll like. Like,
anyone should be able to do a decent, like, Alfredo.
Yeah.
It's not hard.
Olive Garden can do it. If Olive Garden can do it, you can do it. Come on, dude. Like, so Gordon says the only people that can eat this kind of food are the drunk people in the bar, which is, he's not wrong.
Not
but right. But it doesn't seem like anyone at the bar orders food anyways.
No, like, they just drink.
People who go to that bar know not to order the food.
Yeah.
Bottom line. So Chef Eric is defensive of Gordon's criticism of his food and blames the poor quality on him having a bad day. And he and Gordon has a whole thing. Like, Eric walks out of the restaurant because Gordon says the food isn't edible. And Eric and Gordon talk for a minute. And Eric's like, it was a bad fucking day, dude. Like, I need to, like, regroup and get a second chance. Like, I'm not feeling well. Like, he comes up with all these excuses about, like, I'm not feeling well. I've been given poor materials. I had a bad day. I've been having a bad day for, like, 6 months, I guess. Like, I don't know. So Gordon's like, fine. Regroup, get your shit together, put all your problems outside of this restaurant, and let's just have a good dinner service. Spoiler, the dinner service was not good.
Also, before the dinner service, like, when they're talking, he's like, I'm not going to give you any excuses, but, and I'm like, but all you just did was
give excuses.
That's all you did.
It's like, it's amazing to me how much these people will go round in such roundabout ways to not be blamed for what the problems of the restaurant. And it's like, it's collectively all of your faults. Like,
it's collectively all of your faults. But if there's issues with the food, you have to go to the people making it. And you suck.
Start at the top. Head chef is the top. Like, so we get to dinner service, the first dinner service. The entire time, Eric is ignoring his sous chef, Drew. They don't work together at all. And that means that people are waiting hours for spaghetti and meatballs and chicken nuggets.
For undercooked spaghetti and meatballs and chicken nuggets.
And as soon as food gets sent out, it gets immediately sent back to the kitchen as undercooked. And Gordon, like, can't handle it. He just shuts it all down. Like, dinner service, I feel like, lasted maybe an hour. He was like,
this is because nothing was going out.
And if it did, it was cold and undercooked.
And everything that did was undercooked and got sent back. So it was just like,
there's no point.
This lady goes, this is the worst shrimp scampi I've had in my entire life.
How many shrimp scampis have you had in your life, lady?
But also, okay, so I make shrimp scampi all the time because it's one of my favorite pastas. And it's actually not that difficult to make.
No, it's like butter and shrimp and noodles.
But, like, there was no sauce on that scampi.
You need like a good butter sauce for a scampi.
Butter sauce. Well, and because it's such a light sauce, you have to cook the pasta like kind of in the sauce. Like half the cooking of the pasta has to happen in the sauce, or it just like won't take it in. That pasta was dry. Like he took that plain pasta from the pot, slapped it down, threw some shrimp on it with no salt, and said, "Go."
Oh my god! And like I can't have shrimp scampi because I can't have shrimp, but I do. When I did eat shrimp, I did love a shrimp scampi because it's just like butter, basically. It tastes so good. And butter and lemon, but like, yeah, you have to glaze your pasta. You have to at least put olive oil on it.
You have to. Otherwise, it's gross.
Otherwise, it just sticks to the roof of your mouth. This isn't like a Kraft macaroni and cheese. Like, even that probably tastes better than this shit. Like, I love a Kraft macaroni and cheese.
I love Kraft. People hate on Kraft, but I'm like, it's like 89 cents at the grocery store, and it always hits the spot. So there just needs to be less hatred.
And it's like two full meals.
Yeah. Well, I ate the whole box.
I ate the whole box too. Don't worry. Like, and only rarely do I be like, I ate half of this. It's time to put the rest in the fridge for later. But then like an hour later, I'm like, I'm going to eat the rest of that pasta.
The box says it's 4 servings. I'm like, I don't
think for who? Ants?
Ants. This is a noodle for ants.
We used to have to cook. So I have five younger siblings. When we would make macaroni and cheese, it would take like 5 boxes for all of us.
Because it doesn't serve 4. No.
That's like saying a packet of ramen is for 2 people. That is for 1 person.
It's for 1 person. And it's because Kraft knows that like 1 person should not be consuming an entire box of Kraft mac and cheese. But like.
Yeah. It's fully just to make the calorie count look lower because FDA, whatever bullshit. You know what? I'm in the full category of if you like Kraft macaroni and cheese, fucking eat it and don't worry about it. I put hot dogs in it.
Like, maybe don't eat it for every meal.
No.
There's nothing wrong with eating a box of Kraft mac and cheese.
And take a lactate pill if you need to beforehand because that shit will go right through you. This has been our mac and cheese rant. So after dinner service, Gordon meets with Nyla and basically says, you need to fire Eric. He's only here for the paycheck. He's a bad chef. He's probably not even getting paid that much. So like, get rid of him. And
then she's like, but where do I find another chef? And he's like, you literally have one.
You have Drew?
Yeah. She's like, oh yeah,
I guess Drew could probably handle this. It's like, yeah. Yeah. So Nyla and Jeremy get together and they fire Eric and promote Drew. The whole conversation between Nyla and Eric is so awkward because she's like basically kind of dancing around it. And he's like, so what are you going to do? And she's like, you have to leave. And he's like, fine. And then as he's leaving, he's like, I got fucked on that deal. And I was like, clearly you were only here for the no work and all of the money.
Yeah.
Because granted, it's an easy job when there's nobody in the restaurant to cook for. Like. And you still get paid a salary. You're not getting paid like commission. So,
God, I feel so bad for Ashley, the waitress. Like, if the night they were only making $9, like she wasn't making any tips.
No, that's the thing. Like, they never really talk about it in Kitchen Nightmares. They do in Bar Rescue a lot. Is like the fact that you are not making money in your restaurant isn't just affecting you as the owner. Your waitresses are relying on those tips.
Yeah,
because restaurants don't have to pay minimum wage because it's a different industry for some reason.
I don't get it.
We could get into the whole politics of why the restaurant industry is fucking bullshit, but we won't because the whole thing, this isn't what this podcast is for.
But Ashley even talks about it and it's like, you know, this is our livelihood. This is like, and which makes me think like it's a small town. There aren't a lot of jobs. There's not a ton of places to go.
Yeah. I mean, when you're in a small town and you find a job, you got to take it and you got to do what you can. Because you have to make money if you want to leave that town.
But like, she's not making any money when they're only bringing in $9 a night.
Yeah, and she's making $3 an hour, like, if that. That poor girl. If I walked into a restaurant and food was bad, I would still tip, you know?
You still tip. You always tip 20% because it is not your waiter's fault. Unless you actively watch your waiter bring your food to the table and spit in it in front of you. Like,
yeah,
you tip 20%. You just do.
I've never worked in the restaurant industry. I've been very lucky. I've avoided food service my whole life, but I have friends who have done it and who still do it. And I'm like, you are the bravest people in this country. Like, military who? Restaurant workers are the backbone of this country.
The backbone of this country.
Like, you wouldn't have food otherwise. Like, if every... I wouldn't be surprised if someday everybody just went on strike in the restaurant industry and we suddenly had nobody making us food.
Yeah.
You know? Because it's it's a bullshit industry in the first place.
It's awful. And I mean, okay, I'm going to stop because we're going to go too far down this rabbit hole.
We're getting political. So Gordon asked Nyla and Jeremy, like, oh, before dinner service, I forgot about this. They were writing the specials on the board.
Oh my God.
And they were writing Sicilian. And the way they spelled Sicilian was Cecilian. Like,
and then they were like, doesn't it have an S? Doesn't it have a Y? Doesn't it have, like, they tried like 17 times to spell.
I was like, I know this is before iPhones, but somebody please just Google Sicily and Sicilian. Eventually they get there and they're like, thank God nobody saw that. And it was like, oh, the camera saw that for sure, but Gordon did not.
And the editors went, oh, this is great. We're putting this.
This is fucking comedy gold. Eventually they spelled it right, thank God. I would have laughed if Gordon walked in and went, really? Mm-hmm. You're an Italian restaurant, you can't spell Sicilian?
I mean, they offer authentic Italian dinning.
Oh, God. This place is a disaster. So Gordon asks what Drew is good at, and they say pizza, calzones, and lasagna. So they're like, great, we're going to be a pizza place. Got it. So the next day, Gordon inspects the walk-in. This is when we haven't had a good kitchen inspection in a minute. So this is a good kitchen inspection. Gordon goes into the kitchen. The walk-in is full of moldy, like, ham. He, like, sticks it to his hand, and it's just, like, stuck there.
And it's, so, for anyone who doesn't watch Kitchen Nightmares, like, this is good Parma ham. Like, this is the stuff that you cut prosciutto off of. This is not cheap.
It's very expensive Parma ham. And it is sitting moldy and rotten in this fridge next to ground beef that is sitting in its own blood and, like, rotten avocados, which, why do you have avocados? This is an Italian restaurant. And, like, then he takes a UV light. Also,
a child knows that an avocado has one day once you cut it open.
Oh, yeah. You can't.
You can't store half eaten avocados in the walk-in. That's not a thing.
No. And then he, like, finds 3-month-old ribs, which he says are 3 months old. I don't know how he knows, but, like, he always knows how old food is for some reason. And then he takes a UV light and goes, I'm gonna check out the bathroom, a thing he has never done before on this show and hasn't done since, I think.
Like, he was traumatized. He was like, I'm just never doing that again.
Like, he literally vomits after being in the walk-in. He smells something and is like, I gotta get out. He fucking vomits. He takes a blue UV light to the bathroom, and, like, he's like, what? Like, these colors are bodily fluids, and blue is bleach. There's no blue in that bathroom. It's just piss and shit on the ceiling as well. It's like so gross. Like, it's like dive bar bathroom gross.
It's disgusting.
Like, you never, I know you can judge a place on the bathroom, for sure. Like, if the bathroom is nasty, you know the place is nasty. You know the kitchen isn't good if the bathroom is nasty.
Yeah.
So then Gordon has Nyla and Jeremy arrive, and, oh, Jeremy's brother is there too. I forgot his name. Is it Joshua or something?
Oh.
Nyla's other son.
Or, like, John, something with a J.
Yeah, it's another J name. He shows up at the first dinner service just, like, drinking a vodka cranberry and is like, yeah, I do construction. And Gordon's like, do you work here? And he's like, nah, sometimes.
And everyone is just kind of like, okay. And at that point, you just kind of see Gordon's face be like, I don't have time to process all that.
Yeah, so he's hanging around for some reason. I think he just wanted to be on TV, honestly. So Nyla and Jeremy and everyone else shows up, and he takes them to the kitchen and shows them all the bad food and tells them to throw it out. He finds hot dogs that have been there since Super Bowl Sunday, which I'm assuming is way, way before this episode was aired.
I don't have context for, like, when Super Bowl Sunday was in terms of this, but the shock in his voice makes me think it was, like, 4 months ago.
Yeah, it'll say at the end of the article, like, when this was filmed, so we can determine when Super Bowl, because Super Bowl Sunday is always the first weekend in February. We know that famously. I only ever remember that because it's usually the same weekend as my dad's birthday. So there you go. So they show them the kitchen, all of the nasty parma ham. Then they show them the bathroom. And Nyla is like flabbergasted at how gross her bathroom is. It's like, bitch, you own the place.
You own it. Also, like, okay, so yes, a UV light is going to pick up stuff that you can't see with the naked eye. So you could make a very flimsy argument that someone had like wiped the walls down or wiped the floor down or done whatever and just like missed or whatever. But the way that it was like, I hate this, but the way that it was streaked.
The way like, it was splattered?
Like a cloth had not even tried.
It looked like a fucking Jackson Pollock painting. Like,
no one had attempted to clean
this out. Was like a CSI level crime scene investigation UV light situation. Like, it was nasty. So Gordon makes everyone clean. After that, this is a cooking montage. He and Drew make pizzas. Drew makes a fresh pizza. And then Gordon makes a thin crust pizza. And he also cooks a frozen pizza to see if they can distinguish good pizza and frozen pizza.
Thank God they can.
And they can, thank God. Like, he presents Drew's pizza and frozen pizza. And they say, which one do you like better? And they're like, ah, this one. And they're like, good. The other one was frozen. So glad you can, like, determine what is good pizza.
And then Nyla is like, oh, because the frozen pizza kind of tasted like what our pizza tastes like. And I was like, because
it was probably a frozen dough. And now you're making fresh dough. Here's the thing with frozen pizza dough. It's not hard to make fresh dough. It's literally flour, water, yeast, salt, and oil, and like a little bit of sugar.
It's also a dough. You can pre-make barrels of that stuff.
You can pre-cut it. You can pre-size it. Like, you can have your little dough balls just in the fridge, ready to go for the week. Like, it's not hard to make dough.
Walk-ins are always full of rancid meat, and I'm just like, guys, doughs. Doughs.
Where's the vegetables?
Where the vegetables? Why is your meat in giant chunks? Why isn't it portioned?
Why is it sitting in a like bowl full of its own blood? Like,
why isn't it in like an air sealed I have a lot of questions.
I just get so frustrated because I'm like, these are such simple things, and we just can't seem to comprehend that for some reason.
Says the girl, I just want to drink more coffee and there's no coffee in my cup.
I mean, I've never owned a restaurant, so like maybe it is harder than I think, but like I feel like I could do it after watching the show a lot. I wouldn't want to.
The actual running of a restaurant is definitely more complicated than people give it credit for. A lot of the like maintenance of the kitchen is just like you have a nose. If you smell something that's rancid, throw it out.
Yeah. It's like common sense, basically.
Yeah.
Gordon also shows them his own signature style pizza, which they like. And then we get to the makeover. So we didn't really describe what the restaurant looked like before the makeover, except that it smelled and was like broken.
I mean, it wasn't, I feel like as far as, I think the tacky ones really stand out on Kitchen Nightmares. And this one wasn't tacky.
It was boring and run down. It had like reddish carpets. The booths were like broken black leather and the walls were like a yellow beige.
Yeah.
The bar was all dark wood paneling. It was very 70s looking in there.
It was very weird. It wasn't super welcoming, but it also wasn't like, I wouldn't walk in there and be like, oh no.
No, it just looked like small town restaurant to me.
Yeah.
Like I grew up in small towns and that was the restaurant. That was what the restaurants looked like in my small town because you don't have to impress anyone. You're not like trying to get the president to come there. It's just a bar. So the day has been giving the restaurant a makeover inside and out. The carpet is ripped up and the new place is actually pretty nice. It's a pizzeria now. The outside is much cleaner. They changed the like weird font to something more friendly. And like, it looks very family friendly now as opposed to just a bar.
The like weird white cage isn't on the front of the building.
Yeah. And we get to the inside and the bar is much brighter. The carpet's gone. And they have like classic pizza checkered like gingham tablecloths on the tables with like little candles and like nice wooden chairs, and they painted a nicer color. It overall looks much better. It doesn't look like fantastically impressive, but it looks like a decent restaurant.
It looks like a decent restaurant. And it, you know, they're not going, like Nyla said, they were going for fine dining, but like, it's a pizzeria. You need to match the Sbarro.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't think you need fine dining in a small town.
Yeah.
Unless it's like a bougie town.
I don't think it's a bougie town.
But I don't think Lancaster, California is a bougie. It looks like a biker town, honestly. It's like in the desert. I think it's not Palm Springs.
Yeah. People want to eat and they want to know that they're eating food that's clean.
Yeah. They want to eat pizza and then drink a beer and go on with their lives.
Yeah. Nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with that. Every town needs a bar and a restaurant like that, you know? If you can be the local watering hole, do it. So everyone loves the new inside. Nyla's very happy with it. Gordon organizes a pizza eating contest to celebrate the 50th anniversary of Casa Remo's opening and introduces it as the new pizzeria in town. The pizza contest was fun. Like, I don't remember who won. It was some dude.
It was fun. Construction bro was like, I can't do it. So his brother subbed in.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think that's how this works. But okay.
So after the contest promotion thing, Gordon reveals the new menu. It's just pizzas, calzones, stromboli's, typical pizza place affair.
Super straightforward. I love that he was like, bruschetta, it's tomatoes on toast.
Can't fuck it up. During your lunch night, Jimmy is the name of the other guy. Jimmy and Jeremy. So Jimmy is enlisted to help in the kitchen, assisting Drew making calzones. And the calzones are the size of a toddler. They are so big.
He's like, it's a large. I'm like, okay, but I don't think you have a small.
Yeah.
I think it's just...
It was truly like he took a large pizza and then just folded it in half. And he was like, yeah, that's a large. And it's like, no, you need to take a medium pizza and fold it in half. And that's a large calzone.
And then you need to work down.
Yeah. So that's like the big problem at the start is that the calzones are too big. The local fire crew stop in for dinner for some reason. He always gets the fire. For some reason, like,
it's like a nice thing they probably do of like, hey, we're filming Kitchen Nightmares, we'll like pay for your dinner, come.
Pretty much, because this is like the fifth or sixth time a whole group of firemen have just showed up.
Yeah, I think it's like a PR thing.
Yeah, usually he also gets the chief of police, but I don't know if they have a chief of police in Lancaster, California, so at least they have a fire department. So the local fire crew stop in for dinner and they get chicken wings, but they send them back twice for being undercooked. Drew is freaking out in the kitchen a little bit. And Gordon's like, just get it together, dude. Jimmy, slow down on those calzones. They're fucking gigantic.
You guys are making your life so much harder. The bigger something is, the longer it takes to cook, the harder it is to make sure it's cooked all the way through. Like, you're really just shooting yourself in the foot. Make them smaller.
Yeah, and Gordon's like, it's a fucking loaf of bread with some, like, meat and cheese in it. I guess they tasted good, though. People seemed happy with them.
But everyone was also like, can I get, like, 75% of this to go?
Pretty much, yeah. So Drew struggles at first, but then they get their groove, and overall relaunch is successful, I guess. I don't know.
It was like a happy ending episode.
Yeah. They got it together. Food wait times were definitely not 75 minutes anymore.
Thank God.
And pizzas just seem much easier to expedite out than, like, I don't know, whatever. I didn't know what their menu looked like before. They didn't really show it. But it seemed to be a lot of, like, pasta dishes.
Yeah.
And now they have, like, two pasta dishes because it's a pizza place. So.
Thank God.
So Drew steps up. Food leaves the kitchen quickly. Customers are impressed. Relaunch is a success. Gordon ends the night by saying, we want to make money, not spend money. So... Calm down on the calzones. We're going to work on those calzones.
I mean, it's, especially if you're putting meat and like filling them with meat and cheese, that's like hundreds of dollars.
Oh God. That's like, you're making like a $30 calzone and selling it for $12. Like, doesn't make sense.
Okay.
That cousin was so big. So that was the end of the episode. We did it. We made it to the end.
Did it! It was like, it was kind of a feel-good episode because it started out like one of the worst things I'd ever seen, but they actually ended happily.
Yeah.
I think if they hadn't fired Eric, it would have been a very different situation.
Oh, yeah. Well, I can't wait to get to the episodes where Gordon is like, you need to fire the chef. And they're like, no, I don't want to.
And he's like, but... You need to.
You need to, bud. Like,
you need to. Yeah. Also, like going way back, but Eric was like, oh, what? He has Michelin stars, whatever, like, blah, blah, blah. And then he gets out and he's like, I'd never heard of you. And I was like, well, no, you clearly have. Also, your food sucked.
I love when chefs try to be like, I'm better than Gordon Ramsay. And Gordon's like, no, not in any universe are you a better chef than me. I wish you were. Like,
if you were, then I wouldn't have to be here.
I wouldn't be fucking in this middle of California desert. Like, I don't want to be here. Like, where is Lancaster, California? I'm going to have to Google it.
I don't know.
It can't be too far. Most of the places he goes to are near LA.
Probably near LA. As someone from LA, California exists of SoCal, which is Los Angeles and San Diego, and then NorCal, which is like San Francisco and Berkeley, and Monterey, and I guess the capital, but like no one really goes there. And then everything else is just no man's land.
Yeah, as someone who has been to Sacramento, you don't need to go there.
Everyone thinks that LA or San Francisco is the capital anyway, so they all go there, and they're like, I went to the capital, and we're like, no, you didn't, but sure.
You don't need to. Sacramento fucking sucks. It's just hot. It's just hot there. There's nothing fun to do. Lancaster is north of Los Angeles. It is in Los Angeles County. But it's deep in the Mojave Desert, so... now it is the 33rd largest city in California with a population of 160,000. But in 2010, it was 156,000. So there was still a good number of people there.
There's still a good number of people. But also, they have to put Lancaster on their address. That's how we bougie LA proper people differentiate. Because we have because like in the address, if you have to put Los Angeles, California, then you like are in LA proper. But they're like... Lancaster, California, or like Orange County, California.
I mean, a bunch of my family's from Bakersfield, so I get it.
People are like, I'm from LA. No, you're not.
No, I was born in Ventura and my family lived in Oxnard. Like, that's not LA.
Not LA. Although Ventura's nice.
Ventura is nice, yeah. Yeah, my whole family's from basically LA, like around LA. My dad grew up there, so I don't remember where, but he grew up there. So I'm sure he'll text me when he hears this and be like, I grew up in this city. And I was like, I don't remember. I've been to Bakersfield and I've been to parts of LA. Like, I don't remember.
But also, I mean, to be fair, that's pretty common. Like everyone in Illinois from a small town is like, I'm from Chicago. Because if I say where I'm actually from, nobody knows where that is.
That was at my university. Everyone who was from the Bay Area would just say San Francisco or the Bay Area because they're like, you don't know where fucking Mountain View is. Like, no, I don't. Right. I only had one friend who was like, no, I'm actually from San Francisco. Like, I lived in San Francisco.
I lived in San Francisco.
Yeah, like, my parents have a house in San Francisco. And I was like, oh, so you're, like, bougie. Because you live across the bridge in the city.
I mean, we both live in New York City.
So yeah, we're bougie.
We do the same thing. People are like, I'm from New York. And I'm like, but are you from the city?
I mean, I always say I'm from Portland, Oregon. I'm not, but it's just, you don't know where, you don't need to know anywhere else. You don't need to know Beaverton, Oregon. Like, come on.
Everyone needs to know Beaverton, Oregon.
Beaverton, Oregon. That's where I went to high school. It's just a suburb. There's nothing special there. So what happened next at Casa Roma, you may be wondering. Are you wondering?
I am wondering, actually, because they seemed like they had a chance of, like, pulling it together. Yeah. I also know that this was another one that was, like, ish in the recession nonsense. So I was like, not sure. I was hopeful for them though. What happened?
Yeah. I always forget that they truly did film these in 2008 in the midst of a recession.
So like, I was like,
bad timing for the show in general, I think. And I know Gordon, like, I always want them to bring Kitchen Nightmare specifically back because there is still an audience for it, obviously. And the YouTube channel still pumps out clip videos all the time with the stupidest names in the world. Like, that was what I saw recently. A steak pun is a rare medium well done. That was the title of one of the videos. And I'm like, why can't you just say Gordon's worst steak compilations like he used to?
Just say that. Just stop. I think they did like servers we stan.
Yeah. It's like, no. They're trying to get Gen Z into Kitchen Nightmares. I'm like, the show hasn't been on the air since 2014. Like, they weren't even born yet. But I do want them to bring it back. But I think I read somewhere that like it really was hard on Gordon to see all these restaurants fail and not take his advice. And I'm like, I get that. Like, you go in and you pour your heart and soul into those people and you believe in them and you want them to succeed. And they don't.
Yeah.
And it sucks. So I
Although
get it.
I would say now is probably also not the time, as everyone is like, how do I get a restaurant working again after the pandemic? Yeah.
Well, because 24 Hours to Hell and Back literally stopped film, like they ended season 3 and then COVID happened.
Yeah.
And I'm sure Gordon was like, motherfucker, again? Like,
they're like, well, we closed. It wasn't your fault, man. But like,
yeah,
not here anymore.
And that's the same thing, like Bar Rescue now, like John Taffer's on a mission to save Vegas and the hospitality industry. And I'm like, good luck, dude. Like, I it's a big goal, especially in Vegas where there's like a billion restaurants and bars. But anyways, so Gordon revisits Casa Roma. Drew is gone and Nyla had bought her son from the business. The fridge and the restaurant were clean. The biggest surprise is Q from Sebastian's is now the head chef. So there was a chef in season 1, episode 6, in Sebastian's. Everyone knows that episode. We love that episode. It's a shit episode. Sebastian's a nightmare. But there was a line cook there, and now he's the head chef in. Which is why I was like, this has to be near LA, because Sebastian's was truly in Hollywood.
Yeah.
So, but good for them. Nyla had recognized him from the Sebastian's episode and hired him to work for her. So, but after Gordon revisited, they abandoned Gordon's new menu and returned to their previous menu. Boo.
Why?
There were rumors that the owners had been writing a number of reviews themselves on Yelp. Casa Roma was renamed the AV Roadhouse Restaurant Bar and Grill, offering a slim lined menu. It appears that Casa Roma was briefly renamed to CR Roadhouse mid-2015, and that all of the staff to work here after a local restaurant, Nico's, what? All the staff worked there after a local restaurant called Nico's closed. I think that's what that's supposed to say. That sentence is a mess. And then they changed the menu again. Yelp reviews were mostly negative on both AV and CR Roadhouse. And this restaurant once again became Casa Roma, and Casa Roma closed for good in July of 2017. So they did have a good run after Gordon.
Yeah.
They kept it afloat. Nyla posted the blow on Facebook. As of July 1st, Casa Roma will be closing their doors for good. It is going to be a very sad month, but things have come about that can't help but go this way. It's the next chapter in my life, and I love and appreciate all of you who have stood by me and my family and business. Thank you to all of you. Casa Roma aired on March 12th, 2010, and the episode was filmed in March of 2008, so about a month after the Super Bowl.
Okay. That's still too long for hot dogs, though.
That's too long to keep hot dogs in, like, hot dog water in a line. A month? No.
That's too long.
I wonder why it took so long for some of these episodes to air, because I'm noticing more and more that they're getting filmed in, like, 2008, 2009, and not getting aired until 2010. So I wonder if we just... They must have just, like, backlogged a bunch of them.
Maybe.
It kind of sucks, though, because a lot of the restaurants were, like, hoping for the publicity, which has happened for a few of them, when they're like, we didn't get the publicity we wanted, and then we had to close.
Waited.
Yeah, because you took too long to, like, show our restaurant.
I wonder if it was also, like, crossing over with his other shows.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't know, like, the deep behind the scenes. If anyone knows the deep behind the scenes of Kitchen Nightmares in 2008 to 2010, please let me know. I am very curious about it. Because there are some restaurants from this season so far that are still open. We've had two so far that are still open.
Good for them.
Yeah. And they're, like, thriving businesses. And California and Florida. And I think I really do enjoy the ones where they're still open.
Yeah.
And I would do
that. I want them to succeed.
Yeah. At the end of the day, we want them to succeed. Nyla seemed like the nicest person in the world.
Yeah. She's like maybe a little naive, but like super nice.
Seemed to be having a hard time being not doing anything since she got divorced and her kids were grown, you know? I get it. Like, I'm bored all the time too.
The past year and a half, we're like, I feel you.
Yeah, I feel that. I get the boredom. So, but any other thoughts on Casa Aroma before we close this chapter?
I'm genuinely sad that they closed.
I am too. I really wish they had been able to like stick it out, but I hope they're doing well now. I hope they have other business ventures they're getting into.
Yeah.
I hope Nyla is thriving.
Yeah. I feel especially for the ones where like they do really listen to him and try to make the changes and do the thing within the context of the episode, obviously, like not speaking for down the line, but like they really did try and they really did good. And Drew was so excited. So yeah. I don't know, it's just really kind of sad to know that they closed, but also if they went back on everything later, then
yeah. All I hope for most of these places is that they were able to pay off their debt before they closed, or closing helped them pay off their debt, and that they're able to move on with their lives and do something better and more fulfilling for them. Chefs, owners, waitresses, all of them. I hope they're all doing much better things in their lives than just like struggling to keep a restaurant open. Except for Eric. Eric, I don't care what you're doing. you're a dick. Like,
I just, no.
Yeah. No. I wonder what Drew did. I hope Drew is still a chef somewhere. I hope he's still cooking.
I hope he's still a chef somewhere. He seemed genuinely excited when Gordon was like, be creative, do whatever you want. And he was like, oh my God, yay.
Yeah. But yeah, that's Casa Aroma. What a good episode. I love this episode.
It was a good episode. It was a really good episode. And it was inspiring. It was like a real, you can turn things around. You can do it. Kind of. Although the commercial was very misleading because the commercial right before dinner service, at least on Hulu, is like, what will happen? And then there's like a fire truck and you're like, are they going to set the restaurant on fire? And then none of that happens. And you're
This happens like every other episode when the fire department comes in and it just shows a picture of something burning and the fire department coming in and you're like, oh God, the restaurant's going to burn down. And then it's like, not that at all. It's like totally fine.
I'm like, why like,
is this so misleading?
And then in the context of the episode when dinner's over, there's like footage of a fire truck with the siren on, like pulling away from the restaurant. And I'm like, this isn't relevant.
Yeah, no, at all. It just doesn't matter. Fox in the early 2010s really loved their like dramatic editing.
Loved their dramatic editing.
I don't think they can get away with that anymore, though, because it's misleading.
No, they can't. But they love to do the thing still, which is kind of really annoying. And actually, one of my biggest pet peeves about MasterChef is they love to do the things where they're like, and the winner is cut to commercial. And I'm like, no, I'm watching it on Hulu. You don't have to convince me to stay to finish this episode. It's not like I'm going to change the channel. Just
regular TV hasn't caught up to streaming TV yet. It's getting there, but...
But I'm like, no, you need to edit for streaming TV.
Yeah. Where you definitely know I'm paying to not have commercials, because why would I want to sit through a fucking Zoloft commercial for the third time?
And then they recap it. Like, you might have forgotten what was about to happen. And I was like, no. No.
No.
That's like a 30-second recap that I didn't need. their editors drive me a little crazy.
Yeah.
But whatever.
Well, Rachel, thank you for being on my podcast.
Thank you for having me, Courtney. I always love it.
I know you definitely have things to plug.
I have things to plug! So, fingers crossed, knocking on all of the wood and praying against the Delta variant. My show, Blood on My Mother's Apron, is going to be opening off-Broadway on Theater Row on September 15th and running through September 22nd. If you're in the tri-state New York area and you love true crime, come on down. Tickets are only $25, so it's a very cheap way for a great evening, to enjoy a great evening of theater. The lovely Courtney is our stage manager, so she's going to be running everything, which is good because I'm a mess. So
if you want to come to see me, you won't see me, but
be in a booth, but just know that everything's happening because of her.
Yeah.
That's going to be really great. It's based on a Victorian true crime story of a female serial killer. And we've got a really great cast lined up and we start rehearsals very soon. So we hope to see you there. Yeah.
I'll put the link for tickets in the description of the podcast.
You have things to plug.
I do. I was going to say also follow Blood on My Mother's Apron on Instagram for updates.
Follow us on Instagram. We're at Blood on My Mother's Apron Play. We post fun true crime content.
Yeah. And tickets are not on sale yet for my play, but Revolution, I'm in the midst of casting right now. It'll be opening October 29th at the Tank Theater and running until November 7th. So I will let you all know when tickets are available and Delta variant pending. It will happen. everyone has to be vaccinated to even step foot in a theater these days. So, you know.
New York is being really diligent about it. I'm just watching all the shows close on the West End right now and being like,
yeah, New York has this thing called the Excelsior Pass it's an app on your phone. And a lot of places require you to show it to get into them. It's like bars and stuff too. Yeah. And it's just to prove that you've been vaccinated, which I really appreciate because I don't want to be in an establishment full of unvaxxed people. But anyways, Revolution, my play about the 2011-2013 Egyptian protests and the Rabah Square Massacre will be premiering at the Tank Theater, finally. It was supposed to happen 2020, but it didn't, so it's going to happen now. And I am, because I need to rewrite most of it still, so. But it'll be good, and I'm excited to share it with everyone. So I will let you all know when tickets go on sale for that. And yeah, it's been a podcast.
Woo! Then at some point down the line, I'll be in
compulsion. We don't know when compulsion is going to happen because Summerfest is a disaster, but it will happen because I paid to have it happen, so it's going to have to happen. Otherwise, I want my $150 back.
It's going to be great. It's going to be amazing. Courtney wrote a beautiful exploration of OCD and anxiety. And it's a depressing ride, but it's a very cool and informative ride.
Yeah. There's a full video of it on my website if you just want to see the video version, if you can't make it to New York for the live version, which Rachel will also be in. She was in both. So, Rachel and Caitlin will both. Everyone loves Caitlin, too. So she's been on my podcast.
All three of us when Summerfest has a venue.
We do Ramsey's recaps for the Girls, Gays, and Days. So... this is just your reminder to support our theater work. I've truly only ever had two men on my podcast as guests, and they are both gay. So
we have a
I will be. I will never have a straight man on my podcast.
Because you gotta be able to throw some casual shade.
Oh yeah,
all the time. So,
thank you everyone for listening and. We'll be back next week with one of my favorite episodes, Mama Rita's. Ooh, that episode is a disaster and I love it. Rachel, say bye.
Bye, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us. Have a
good one. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Ramsey's Recaps. If you liked this episode, please give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It really helps us out. If you want to follow us, you can follow us on Instagram at Ramsey's Recaps. You can also follow me on TikTok to see all of the recipe videos that go with the episodes at It's a Me Courtney 1. And if you want to support us financially, you can throw a few dollars our way on Ko-Fi. That's ko-fi.com/CourtneyStyle. The links to everything will be in the description, and I'll see you in the next one. Bye.